Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, guys. Welcome back. Another Side Hustle City episode with my trusty co-host, Kyle Stevie.
Yes, sir.
And now we have a guest for you today, Charlie Kamisaska. I didn't butcher that, did I, Charlie? Okay, good, good.
Nailed it.
Nice, nice. Sometimes I have trouble with the Italian names.
Pronunciation practice worked.
I know. Cincinnati Public did me no good. But, Charlie, we had a little conversation before this. Sounds like your wife's a travel nurse and you're a side hustler.
Yes, sir. You got it.
Probably works out for the relationship that, you know, with her flexibility and having to move around from city to city every 3 months or so, it's probably a good thing that you can be flexible in your job as well, right?
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, I love that setup. Just kind of able to tag along with the wife and let her take me on a tour of the country. There's nothing better.
Yeah, well, she's the boss. I've learned that in my own relationship. Let her lead.
Happy wife, happy life.
Happy wife. That's exactly, dude, it's so true. I thought it was a joke, but nope, true. Definitely, yeah, happy wife, happy life.
She's listening, so I appreciate you saying that.
There you go. Oh, man, so we will watch our mouths. The lady's listening. We better be good. So, Charlie, tell us a little bit about what got you into side hustling. Was it the relationship? You know, we like to have a nice, diverse group of people on here because, you know, our audience is very diverse in what they want to try to do. And, you know, maybe Amazon's not for everybody. Maybe rental property's not for everybody. Maybe people are in different lifestyle situations. But you certainly are with the, you know, travel nurse wife. But is that what got you into the side hustle thing, or what got you going into that?
Yeah, no, for me, it kind of started before that all played out. Actually, the fact that I was able to work remotely is one of the things that led us to go on to the travel nursing sort of lifestyle.
Oh, so
yeah, for me, it's kind of always been something that I'm interested in. Really, since I was a kid, I've wanted to start a business. So it's something that as I've gone throughout my professional career, even when I was working in sort of a full-time capacity, I always had my eye on kind of a side hustle and working to start a business.
Interesting. Interesting. So talk about a little bit about, it sounds like you were doing some consulting work and, you know, what was your 9-to-5 before all this thing started?
Yeah. Yeah. So I worked as a management consultant for a company called Consilio, and we did legal management and technology consulting for the corporate legal departments of pretty big companies. It's about as boring as it sounds, I guess, is one way to put it. But it was a pretty cool job. I mean, I was able to travel, you know, pre-pandemic when work travel was still a thing. You know, they sent me to a bunch of different places, which was pretty neat. And but yeah, what we really did was we worked with these big companies, legal departments, and optimized different business processes that they would regularly do. And we built sort of software tools, technology tools around those processes to, you know, to save them money ultimately, to make things more efficient. So yeah, it sounds boring. It, in a way it is, but in a way it was interesting to me, and I definitely learned quite a bit along the way doing that.
So is your background in law? Is that what you got your degree in and everything?
No, sir. No, sir. I had a background in business, actually. And it's strange, man. There are so many different little niche areas of consulting, like the one that I ended up in. I found out, you know, when I was in college and doing the whole interview process to become a consultant, you just realize there are so many of these little boutique consulting firms that specialize in, you know, every niche imaginable. So I really just like stumbled upon the area of corporate legal department consulting. Wasn't something that I was, you know, passionate about or looking for. Just sort of found it, like, I think at like a career fair, that sort of thing. But I really was drawn to the people that were in it. You know, I think there are a lot of really smart people in consulting and in my company in particular. And yeah, I just enjoyed the idea of traveling for work and working remotely as well.
I like that. So it just plays right into the wife's business. But unfortunately, we can't meet right now. So that's got to be hurting you a little bit.
Yeah, like us in person, you mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, trade shows, any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That is a, you know, it's a bummer of this whole situation. But I guess the good news is it looks like we're on the upswing now. You know, hopefully in the next few months here, we'll be getting back to normal.
Well, it sounds like your wife's right there. So if anybody knows, it's probably her, right? I mean, she's dealing with COVID patients.
That's right. Yeah, she's been working with COVID patients since pretty much the pandemic really got started. So yeah, she's kind of seen it all there. I'm pretty proud of her, to be honest. It's not always easy, but she does a great job.
Yeah, she's one of those heroes they talk about, right? They got the signs out at all the hospitals. Heroes work here. Your wife's one of them. So God bless her for it.
Yeah, she is to me. She is to me anyway.
So yeah, so tell us a little bit more. You were doing this, you had this life, you kind of had this 9-to-5 thing, you're doing consulting now. I think you mentioned before that's maybe, what, 20% of what you're doing right now?
That's right.
And do you do that through a company, or is that, you know, do you still, are you like consulting for the previous company that you work for, or did you just kind of go it on your own and you got, you know, a nice book of clients or something right now from that?
Yeah, it was the first one. So I basically just, you know, after working there for 6 years or so, I had had a lot of great mentors at that company. And I was able to kind of just tell them that, hey, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, really diving into a couple of startups. And but at the same time, it would be nice to kind of work for you guys in a part-time capacity, have some, you know, kind of stable income while I'm working on these startups for the majority of the time. And, I mean, God bless them. They were very, accommodating and, willing to kind of help me out with that arrangement. So I was able to kind of like, you know, quit my full-time employment with them, but still work, as sort of a contractor type role, about, you know, between 10 and 15 hours a week, on average is what I'm at right now.
Oh, okay. So tell us about, you know, because Kyle and I are both startup guys, right? I built a company with my co-founders. Actually, they mostly built it, but
you take credit. For it.
I was there. I was there for the ride. I was there at the beginning. You know, first 18 months is the hardest part. So, you know, we built a company, sold it in 2015. I've got three other startups that I'm consulting for, essentially. Kyle's invested in one of those. He's also invested in several other businesses. He's into real estate, dabbles in that too. So, you know, we've been around, you know, entrepreneurs, we've been around investment opportunities. A lot of our listeners have too. What got you into the startup thing? And like, specifically, what are you doing now?
Yeah, for sure. So for me, like I mentioned, I kind of always had my eye on a startup or a side hustle. And, while I was working full time as a management consultant, I had enough time to get started. So, you know, I had a few things up and running by the time that I finally quit last year. And for me, I was drawn to e-commerce, as a concept. And I really think it comes down to kind of, this might sound weird, but the way that I view the internet. So like the way I think about the internet is it's this like still relatively new thing. Though we don't think about it that way, especially like millennials and beyond, we think we've always had it pretty much. So we think about it as this, like, you know, just part of life. But like, if you put it into more of a historical context, like think about the Industrial Revolution. It took really like 80 years for the Industrial Revolution to play out in terms of the way that it really shaped society. Well, I think the digital revolution, if you will, is kind of the same, following a similar pattern. You know, we're about 30, 40 years into widespread adoption of the internet. I think it's still just rapidly changing the way that we do life, you know, and it's certainly true in the business realm as well. And, you know, I think, though, unfortunately, most people kind of misuse the internet. It seems to me like the primary function for a lot of people is entertainment. Right.
I would say like, I would say like YouTube. I mean, I know that I sit at, you know, when I do watch TV, I sit there and watch YouTube videos on how to make money. And,
buddy,
you know,
we are the dumbest collection of human beings on any time in history. We're willfully ignorant. We have so much information at our fingertip.
Oh, it's crazy.
And all that 99% of America cares about is a celebrity's life or what shoes they're wearing or like who's dating who. And
Yeah, you're finishing my sentence, Kyle. It's like what I like to say is all we care about is sharing memes and cat videos.
Yeah, okay. Like we should all be like so smart now. We don't even need to speak words. We should just be able to mentally use telepathy to communicate because literally everything that humanity's ever created, all you have to do, and they even made it easy. But like Google even made it easy. Like they stole the shit out of your data for it, but at least they made it easy and collected it all in one place. And all you have to do is type in like, what is this? And then it all pops up in less than a second.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Yeah, it's incredible. Exactly. Like the way we should view the internet is as the greatest library or repository of information ever assembled and instantaneously accessible, right? In a second, you can learn anything you need to learn.
It's crazy how the younger people, and I don't know how old you are, but I remember going down a damn card catalog. You know, I mean, I went to school in downtown Cincinnati.
Oh, the library card catalog.
Yeah, which back when I was going to school, it was a freaking war zone down there. I think it was, I tell people every once in a while, the west end of downtown Cincinnati was the most dangerous neighborhood, according to the FBI, for an entire decade, the whole 2000s. And I went there in the 88 to 95, which it wasn't good during, it was probably worse. I don't know how the FBI thought the 2000s were bad. The 90s were even worse. But, you know, I had to walk from school over to the stupid library and past, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff just to get into this stupid card catalog and try to find whatever it was I was trying to do research on.
I would use microfiche there. The microfiche.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that
how
you say microfiche?
Yeah. I think that's it, yeah. And then they finally, after I graduated college, you know, we didn't have a computer at the house because we were broke. So I'd go down to the library from Price Hill and go downtown, take my little metro bus down there. And then I'd get online and I ended up playing fantasy basketball most of the time. Like it was like when it first started out. And I'm like, yeah, but. You know, I mean, that was like computers were just like coming into the libraries at that point. But I remember those days and how it was so hard to learn. I mean, you know, some kids, they had encyclopedia sets at their house. You know, they had like a whole room, like a wall and an entire room dedicated to these encyclopedias, you know, and that's you were like a cool kid. Like you didn't have to go to the library if you had the encyclopedia thing practically. And then we had to go down there. Now these kids got everything. They've got access to. God, you ask Siri and she'll tell you, you know?
We have the ability to check, like site check Wikipedia because my boys are in college. So all the professors are pretty much, you can't use Wikipedia as a source.
Yeah.
Bullshit. You may not be able to cite to it, but it's a good starting place. And then at least you can and it has links to the citations at the bottom
that you can go. It's not even hard. You link them. You don't have to like go back to the card catalog and find that, you know, It's crazy the access to the information and how a lot of people, and honestly, this is probably half of what we talk about on this podcast is, guys, you have access to all this stuff. Why are you not using this? Why are you finding it difficult to live in a capitalistic society when you have access to all of this information on how to make money, how to do things? It's crazy to me that how people aren't digging in a little bit more. It's just wild to me.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. You guys get it. You kind of understand where I'm going with this. It's like, you know, it's absolutely true that the internet is changing the way the sort of business world is structured. And for startups and entrepreneurs, it's like, it's never been easier, right? You don't need a loan to open some brick and mortar store.
Right.
You don't need big connections or a higher education in business. All you need to start a business now is a Wi-Fi connection, which everybody in this country has, and a willingness to work your ass off. And that's it.
Don't say that. you're killing the victim dream. You can't do that.
I think
that.
You guys are on mute if you're...
You said don't say that. I thought maybe that was
about the funniest thing I've said the whole freaking time. We've been on here for like 30 episodes. I've been like Eeyore with my slow speak and my monotone voice, and I actually said something funny, and it got muted. I lost it.
No, he said, don't say that. He said, you're going to kill the whole victimhood mentality thing. You're going to kill their narrative.
Right. Oh, man.
So what are you doing specifically? Like, what's the startup thing? Like you mentioned before, like you have a kind of a process and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like I said, all my kind of view of the internet, which we just walked through, led me to e-commerce. So about 3 years ago, I started just hunting for, you know, sort of the right way to start an e-commerce business. I was kind of taken with this idea that I can, you know, sit in my living room, you know, in my boxers and start a business. I just thought it was awesome. You know, I could sell products online that I never had to really touch myself. And so that's what I did. I spent months researching, figuring out, a product to sell, creating a business plan. And, I started my first e-commerce business. First one didn't go so well right away. You know, it took a long time to iron out, and, we can come back to that, I guess, in a little bit. But the first business that I did end up successfully starting, is called Conscious Products. So it's a brand that is based on Amazon, uses a fulfillment method called Fulfillment by Amazon, which you guys are probably familiar with.
Mm-hmm. FBA. Yep.
FBA. Yep. So it's an FBA business, and we sell biodegradable disposables. So our main flagship products are these square disposable plates and these like clamshell to-go boxes. And they're made of a material called bagasse, which is biodegradable, compostable, totally eco-friendly. So really riding like a sustainability type trend in the market. And it's awesome. That business is still active to this day. Sorry about that. This business, still active to this day, extremely low maintenance. I mean, I probably work on it like maybe an hour a week. And it's me kind of like sitting in front of the TV fiddling with my advertising.
See, I love that you're talking about this right now, because literally we just recorded another podcast like a half an hour before we got on with you. And the guy was also an Amazon guy. He lives down in Puerto Rico, and he bounces between his place in Puerto Rico for tax purposes, goes to events when they're happening. He goes to Vegas. So he's got a house in Vegas. And then he's also got a place in China, because that's where the manufacturers are. So he's got like these strategic homes around the world that he just bounces from one to the other. And, you know, that's how he does this business. But he said the same thing you're saying is, I don't spend a ton of time. Like, I don't have to spend a lot of time on this.
Right. Yeah, no, that's the best part. I mean, don't get me wrong. In order to get to that point, you got to put in some work. It doesn't happen overnight. But once you get there, the sort of maintenance of the business is very low maintenance.
He talked about that. He talked about process. Yeah.
Reliable as well, given that, you know, the business is on Amazon. It's where, you know, almost 50% of all online sales take place in this country. That's like, you know, almost $400 billion runs through Amazon every year. I think most people, you know, average people don't realize that when you buy something from Amazon, you're not buying it from Amazon, at least probably. Right. It's made up of over 2 million third party sellers, small business owners for the most part, who are selling products like me, which I think is fascinating and surprising to some people when they first hear that for the first time.
That is surprising. When you say that money, now that we've gotten these $2 trillion stimuluses, billions don't even sound like a lot of money anymore.
It's true. That's true. But one company doing, you know, $400 billion in sales.
That's pretty impressive.
By far, Yeah, they're the biggest player by far.
I mean, they could actually monopolize the market if they wanted to, if they wanted to be the one selling all of this stuff. But the fact that they open it up to sellers like you is actually kind of impressive.
Yeah, no, it's actually a genius business model. I mean, they still make money off me. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they charge a 15% referral fee. So right off the bat, 15% of every sale goes to Amazon. Plus, if you enrolled in the Fulfillment by Amazon program like I am, which is an awesome program, by the way, you know, you send your inventory to Amazon, they store it, they ship it out, they handle customer service, the whole nine yards. But that also comes with a cost. Of course, you're going to pay Amazon for the fulfillment expense.
Sure.
Well.
But you don't want to have to do all that. Like what, you know?
Right. No, it's totally worth it, in my opinion. Great business model.
So what do they take? What is the FBA? What do they take versus you just like selling a product on Amazon? Like if I just decided, hey, I got space upstairs here, I'll just warehouse the stuff myself. And every time an order comes through, I'll just ship it out. What is that? What kind of time does that save you versus like, what do you have to pay them?
Well, the time that it saves is just like incalculable. If you're doing, you know, if you're pushing, you know, even a few dozen units a month, but forget that. Talk about, you know, if you want to really scale and push hundreds of units a month, forget it. You're going to be drowning in it. And the cost actually varies based on how large the product is. Right. So, you know, Amazon has the best shipping rates in the world. That's the other thing. If you're shipping out products yourself or outsourcing to another third party, they're not going to beat Amazon's rates. They can ship a 50-pound product, you know, 10 times cheaper than you and I can.
Well, I've also heard, too, I talked about this on the last episode or the last guy we just talked to. I just saw a guy, he does, you know, Amazon or arbitrage, right? So he goes right to Walmart, he buys stuff that's on sale, and he turns around and he sells it. And then when he brings it back, he said he literally had these football gloves, right, for receivers. And he went and bought these gloves. I can't remember how much they were. They were pretty cheap. But he goes out and he gets these gloves, and you know, he bought them for $3 or something on sale. He was selling them for $10. Well, he had 70 of them or something crazy like that. And then Amazon made him break up the shipment into several different shipments for some strange reason. I don't know how that worked. And then he said there was some kind of way around it. Like the bigger amount that you have, the less amount of shipments that Amazon will make you put it in. Do you know anything about
right
that?
You know, I'm not sure without knowing a specific situation. It could be that they wanted him to send them to different fulfillment centers. Cause they, you know, they have these,
that's what it was, three different fulfillment centers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have a big shipment, then Amazon will just move it around for you. You know, they'll say, okay, forget it. Just send, you know, send all 10,000 of these things to us, this one fulfillment center. And then we will, as we see fit, move it to the other centers around the country.
So do you just focus only on Amazon or using any other platforms?
Very glad you asked. No, I don't just focus on Amazon. That was my first brand that I started, like I mentioned. But I became interested in some of the other platforms that are out there. So the second brand that I started is based on Shopify. So I do have a Shopify store, which does pretty well, through a brand that I call, it's called Eugenite. And Eugenite is a like personal care consumer products company. So this, you know, my buddy and I, who kind of started the store together early last year, kind of pre-pandemic, actually were interested in looking at starting kind of like a travel accessory company. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, suddenly travel goes to zero. That's, you know, we had to pivot essentially at that point. So what we did is we kind of saw the need for, in a time when people were, you know, basically just becoming more and more anxious, being cooped up with the stay at home orders, you know, because of the pandemic and the sort of the fear that was around it. We started kind of a brand that centered around trying to help people change their mindset up, as well as, you know, selling products that help one to sort of adjust to a stay at home lifestyle, as it were. So for that time, we did really well. Kind of one of the first new brands to try something like that. And we did awesome with that one. I'm proud of Ugonite. But we sold products through a bunch of different sort of like verticals. We sold like home fitness products and more like personal care type products, and kitchen gadget type products, just a ton of stuff. And we were able to do that through a drop shipping model. So we had if you guys are familiar with that, you know, you don't have to store any inventory yourself. You find drop shipping suppliers who will ship the products directly to your customer when they make a purchase. So that allows you to test out a bunch of different products quickly and inexpensively, because there's basically no upfront investment with drop shipping.
Interesting.
Yeah. I like the approach of, I don't know why, I just feel like I like the approach of diversifying a little bit too. There's something to be said about being a master of a domain, sort of, but at the same time, you know, you get on the outs. Like,
these YouTubers, right? They're getting demonetized and stuff, and they don't have another platform.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, with Twitter, social media, like, if a lot of these guys build a big base, and then that's where they get their advertising dollars from, and then they say something stupid, and somebody reports them, and then it's sayonara, sucker. So, yeah, I like the idea of going to Shopify. Is eBay even a thing anymore in terms of, like, as a place that people can go to grow?
Yeah, how's that work?
You know, I haven't sold on eBay with any real volume. I did put a product or two on there last year, but just didn't see the same ability to scale. So it's not a platform that I'm super familiar with. My stores are all based on either Amazon, Shopify, or WooCommerce with WordPress. So those are kind of the platforms that I stick to. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think there's two schools of thought, right? I mean, you can go deep in a niche and really try to capture significant market share. But for me, I think I just like to keep moving and try new things and learn new things. So for me, we just kind of kept the ball rolling. We started another Shopify store last year as well. After the first one was doing pretty well. Actually my brother-in-law really started this business. And I kind of like signed on with him to help him with the digital marketing and the e-commerce component of it. But he sells luxury clothing, and custom suits is the main product that he sells. So for the most part, his job is like outside sales, right? He's, meeting with people, in person at their office or home, or cold calling people, and then going and outfitting people for custom suits. So he's doing really well with that. But last year we decided to like try to transition a part of that online, because almost nobody is doing that with sort of luxury high-end custom apparel. So what we did is we built a Shopify store. It's called DestinoClothing.com. That's his business, Destino Clothing. That store, you can buy like a fully custom suit directly online. So there are like, if you've ever been outfitted for a custom suit, there are like 1,000 different options and measurements that need to be taken.
Say that again. It's Destino.
Destino Clothing, like destiny in Italian, Destino.
You Italians, you love clothing. I actually got you were speaking of custom suits. I got mine made in Milan for my wedding. We actually got married at the Vatican, my wife and I. And we thought, if we're going to get married at the Vatican, I need an Italian suit, right? So we were in Milan, and where better to get a suit made than in Milan, right?
Nowhere better.
Yeah, maybe except for this. Maybe this Destino. Maybe this is my new place to go.
Yeah. My brother-in-law would definitely appreciate it. Yeah, I'm not as involved with that brand anymore, but I helped him kind of set up the e-commerce side of things.
Is this all Shopify here?
That's all Shopify, yeah. Yeah, he's still running it. He's still doing very well with that brand.
Oh, wow. And are they being tailored offshore, or how does this work? Like, somebody orders one of these suits, these are custom. Like, he doesn't have these just laying around.
That's right. Yeah. He worked for like one of the largest custom suit companies in the world, Tom James, prior to starting this business. So he learned kind of the ins and the outs of supply, the whole supply chain, as well as kind of the marketing side of things, like finding customers. And he just decided to go off and do his own thing, realizing that, you know, hey, I'm doing most of the work here. This is my network of people that I'm selling to now. Why am I paying, you know, 70 something percent commission back to the company and only keeping 28% for myself, you know? So he decided to kind of flip the model and run his own business. And yeah, he's been doing that for a year and a half now and doing very well.
Well, nice. Hey, he's got a great name for it. And then what has he got? Sicily is the,
Sicily there yeah. And his logo there. Oh, another Southern Italian. Yeah. You guys can do anything with your last name. I swear it.
I know.
You like, and French people.
Like my last name.
We're German. We can't do shit. We can open a brewery.
Well, I'm anglicized German. So like I'm Stevie. Like I'm Kyle Stevie.
What was it when it was German?
A country singer or I can work in logistics. And that's basically the extent of the careers I can have.
Yeah.
Do you know the German root though? What did it used to be? That's the real question.
Yeah, I do. My dad's cousin, they actually go every couple of years and they stay for a week to 2 weeks with our family over there. I got to make that trip at some point in my life.
What was the name? What was awesome. The original?
Stuve or something. It had the S-T.
Oh, had the umlaut?
U with the, what is it called?
Umlaut,
yeah. V-E. So.
Well, my name's Kaler. Like it's Kohler, K-O-E-H-L-E-R is what it looks like. We say Kaler, but it's also like the same, it's a transliteration. Like it's the Kohler people who make the faucets and the toilets and stuff. They had an umlaut over their O, which negated, I think, having the E. So we're K-O-E, they're K-O-H.
Oh,
yeah. So nice. we can make toilets. That's what we can do. And beer. And you guys can do pretty much everything else. Any kind of luxury good, it Italians. Yeah. Italians and French people.
Yeah, and they're always like dapper. They're always dressed nice. Yeah. They always look good. And I always feel like such a hillbilly creep.
But you know what the crazy thing is? When you go to Europe and you go to any of these Germanic countries, they're actually the fancy people. They're like the ones who are like the Swiss.
Yeah, the Swiss and the German. So that's two totally different things. Because when I lived in Mexico, they had a lot. Believe it or not, Mary, they had a lot of Germans down there.
Yeah, they invented mariachi music, essentially. They brought polka to Mexico, and the Mexicans kind of took it and turned it into mariachi.
What I'm saying is going back to the style, all right? It isn't a Sam Rizzo-type place. Like, these guys wearing full camouflage with black socks and flip-flops, and they're all, like, 7 foot tall.
Yeah.
Stuck out
Northern
sore thumbs.
Germans, yeah.
Yeah, they dressed like... quote, like the stereotypical kind of Euro trash look. And I'm like, you went out, like I dress kind of trashy, but like they made me feel like I was like in a Sam Rizzo suit. Like,
well,
I
was like, we're German hillbillies.
Yeah.
That's what we are. So Destino, what, skin, you know, my name's Destino. I could do anything. I just put my name on it and throw Sicily on there. Legit. Like all of a sudden, whatever I do.
Look at that cut though. That's going to accentuate my love handles. Look at that thing. Those are nice. That's a suit you wear
if you're proud of your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're like, I look fucking good.
If you don't wear a swimsuit in the swimming pool, you would wear.
I'm going to throw this suit on and I'm going to go outside. People are going to be impressed. That's what's going to happen.
There's a guy that's moving something. I want to be part of that guy's crew.
Kamasaska. I could do anything. Any company.
Yeah. Went to Notre Dame.
Kohler. A few things.
Yeah.
Beer.
Stevie, I don't know.
Beer, man. Hey, I wish I could make a beer, though. That's a thing.
There you go. There you go. You can make wine. Dude, anything outside of beer.
Now you're thinking.
Well, you come down here and you got to have a hillbilly last name to do bourbon, I think.
There we go.
You have bourbon. Anglicized you definitely.
German.
Yeah, like a Scotch-Irish name.
You got three first names, you're in.
Yeah, anything anything Scottish-Irish, yeah, you can do it. So
make a pseudonym if we need to.
That's right. Yeah, there you go.
So how did you like Notre Dame? How did you like South Bend? I've been up there a couple of times to visit my friends.
Man, I love Notre Dame. It was an awesome experience going to school there. Just made some awesome friends. And, you know, it's like it's weird. South Bend is kind of a nothing town when you go off of campus.
Yep.
It has, don't get me wrong, it has its charms in its way. But then you get on campus, it's just like this... just beautiful, beautiful little place.
South Bend, you're being very nice and judicious with South Bend. South Bend's a crap hole, but it's got Notre Dame's campus, and then Notre Dame's campus is beautiful. Do they still have the boatyard or the shipyard or whatever? When I was there, God, it's early 2000s. It's like $15. Like, you pay $15, show your ID. They give you a pitcher, an empty pitcher, and it's yours to drink all night long. And on Saturday,
I don't know about that one.
Well, they don't have any more.
I would expect that from the Irish.
But on Saturdays, all Saturdays, the Notre Dame players came.
So remember
Rocky Boyman?
Yeah.
He was there. We played the same position in college, right?
Except he was Rocky Boyman and you were Kyle Stevie.
Yeah, except he was 6'4", 245 pounds and looked like Michelangelo carved him out of granite. And then they had me and I was 6 foot and a half, 235 pounds, just dumping from.
He was destined to be an NFL player and you were destined to be a freight broker.
Yeah. Well, I saw him and Anthony Weaver's. It was a defensive tackle for him. Anthony Weaver's arms were the size of my waist. I swear to God, I looked at the guys like, holy Jesus, somebody has to block you? You guys want some of my beer? You can have some.
How are you
beer.
Not winning the national championship? Friend. Come on.
No, they made it to they beat Nebraska when Nebraska was number one.
Oh, did year. They? Okay.
I think they wound up losing like 3 or 4 games. They were not like they are now.
Yeah, you guys always seem to, Charlie, you guys always seem to be at the edge of the championship. Like a couple times, I remember being in Florida and you guys were playing Alabama. And I didn't go in the game. But I didn't have to because the tailgate was better than the game.
Oh, yeah. Adam, I had the same exact experience for that game. I was there. That was I was down there with a bunch of my buddies from college, and like three of them got tickets in a lottery or something like that. And the rest of us were just out there, you know, pissed off, envious of them the whole time while we're tailgating. Then about, you know, 4 hours later, they were kind of wishing they hadn't gone in the game, I think.
Yeah.
Which time, though? Which time was it? Was it this past year?
That was 2012.
Yeah, 2012.
See, here's the problem. A, Manti Te'o's story happened. That totally blew his credibility. Like, he went from being like a Superman to kind of, I think it shook his confidence a little bit. But that was that was a team of momentum and destiny. They were not a good undefeated team. They were a mediocre undefeated team. This team, this past year, was actually they had a good like SEC caliber defense finally, but they just didn't have the core. I mean, Book's good, but he's not the quarterback that's going to beat Alabama. And then Alabama had one of the best wide receivers college football has ever seen.
Well, I just remember the tailgate being awesome, and the Alabama fans, they tailgate.
Oh,
that's a real tailgate.
Schools, yeah.
We got UC, which our program is on the come up, right? Even though you stole Brian Kelly from us.
Oh, you're losing Fickell.
Yeah, you still. Well, I don't. Yeah, maybe because of the whole situation.
Yeah, trust me, you're losing Fickell.
Yeah, but you guys stole Brian Kelly. That was the one reason. I used to like Notre Dame, and I'm from the west side of Cincinnati. And a lot of people that go to like Elder, St. X, Colerain, they end up going to the big Catholic schools around here. Definitely, they end up going to Notre Dame.
Michael Mayer's there. The tight end Michael Mayer's there right now. We're in Covington. He went to Covington Catholic.
Yeah, all the big Catholic schools from Cincinnati. All those kids go to Notre Dame. They don't come to Cincinnati. I want them to come to Cincinnati, but you guys stole Brian Kelly, and then you steal Freeman from us, our defensive coordinator. You guys, you're stealing everything. You're stealing our people. You're stealing our
conference.
Coaches.
Adam, getting a real conference.
We do need to get. They're not even in a conference. What?
Yeah, but they got a TV contract.
Yeah, and they got history and legacy and Rudy. You guys got everything.
Yeah, you can have Brian Kelly back, but other than that, I'm sorry.
We don't want him now. If Fickell leaves, we'll take Brian Kelly back. I'll accept that offer.
We'll trade you Brian Kelly.
No, don't trade me Fickell. No, I want Fickell. I want Fickell. Don't leave Fickell. I belong to this like Catholic business owners group. He's supposed to come out and speak to us in May. So that'll be pretty interesting. So he is Catholic. And he's not like Irish Catholic, I don't think. Well, Fickell, is that Irish? That might be Irish.
I don't know.
Because Brian Kelly said that was the only job he would leave for because he's so hardcore Irish Catholic.
Well, Urban Meyer said the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're Irish Catholic, I mean, your dream is be on the wall next to the great coaches of Notre Dame. I mean, how could you not do that?
Get to hang out with Lou Holtz.
Don't,
when he comes in
don't get rid of Brian Kelly. Just keep him. Will you guys just do that for me?
All right, I'll put a word in.
We'll put a word in. Say, look, your e-commerce guy graduated from Notre Dame. I got a little bit of pool. Keep Brian Kelly. Yeah. That's all He's we ask. Stay. Just for my friends in Cincinnati.
I'll give you a free 3 months in my program. Just make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. So, Charlie, tell us a little bit about this process. You said you could walk through the process just quickly, and I don't know if you've got some kind of a program or something that our listeners can jump into and, you know, maybe learn more, but go over this process.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So after starting those different e-commerce brands, and I think we skipped one of them, but it's all right. I think you guys get the point. I started, you know, 4 or 5 e-commerce brands over the last year or so that have all done reasonably well. But it took me a while to get them to that point. Once I figured out kind of what I was doing, I realized that I had something pretty cool that was kind of worth sharing with people. So I started my latest company, which is called the e-commerce boardroom. So you go to ecomboardroom.com. That's kind of the main page of our site. And, you know, just kind of like give you some context for this process that I've been kind of hinting at. The way I arrived at this, I think, is kind of important to understand, you know, what it's really all about. So when I mentioned before, I think that when I first got into e-commerce, when I first tried to start that that first brand, that Conscious Products disposable plates brand, I actually failed pretty hard and pretty fast. And I attribute that failure, if you will, to a kind of a pet peeve of mine on the internet, which is the internet marketing guru or expert. I'm sure you guys have come across people like this who basically just are claiming to be a guru or an expert in some area.
Oh, you mean those guys that like rent luxury cars and fake like Airbnbs, like fancy Airbnbs, and then film their little videos and act like they live there and they drive all these cars?
Exactly.
Those guys.
Exactly, man. Oh my God. They're out there. And some of them are even a little more subtle than that. And I'd like to, maybe I'm just remembering this way for my own sanity, but I think I got kind of roped in to one of those who was maybe being a little bit more subtle than that, but still at the end of the day, he was this sort of personality, right? This faux expert in the e-commerce and specifically in the Amazon FBA space. So I sort of like bought into this dude's masterclass or whatever you want to call it. I tried to start this business and, I went through the whole process. I picked this product, launched it online, and ultimately the thing just like flopped, you know. I did not do enough in sales to cover my costs. I was basically just hemorrhaging money. And I just had to like take a step back for a second and say to myself, okay, what is going on here? Like I had to pause all the ads, pause everywhere that I was spending money and just take a step back and try to figure out what the heck was going on. And actually what I tried to do and what I think I did successfully was apply the stuff that I had learned as a management consultant, doing process optimization and technology design to the world of e-commerce. So what I mean by that is like, I looked at this thing that I learned from this guru and I kind of just mapped out his entire process, right? I fleshed out all of the assumptions. I started asking all of these questions like, okay, what is Amazon FBA really? Because to hear this guy tell it, it is the end all be all in e-commerce. It is the only, you know, path to victory. But at the end of the day, that's not true, right? Amazon FBA is just a fulfillment model. It's just a way to store your inventory and deliver it to your customers. But is that the only way to accomplish that? Absolutely not. So I tried to apply this process optimization technique to e-commerce. And like to, again, kind of further contextualize this, I can remember like learning this process from my boss, this guy named William, who's this sort of like older British dude. And I can remember sitting in this conference room of like a Fortune 500 level company. I'm just like, you can imagine me like this analyst, like nervously taking notes, trying not to say something stupid. But my boss, William, is kind of running the show and he's standing at the front of this conference room table. So a bunch of executive level people in the legal department around this table. He's facing a whiteboard, right? On the whiteboard is this sort of like multicolored series of graphics. If you didn't know what we were doing, it looks more like Egyptian hieroglyphics than anything else, right? It's completely like unintelligible stuff, basically. But what it was, it just mapped out this business process that this company regularly did. I think it was their process for approving invoices or something like that. So William, right, he's standing in front of this. He's sort of looking at it, having mapped it all out. He picks up this big red marker, right, and he just goes to town. He starts crossing out big sections of the board where steps of the process weren't needed. You know, he redraws the arrows, reordering the steps in the process to make it more efficient. And, you know, he adds in little bits of resources and support here and there where it was needed. And he kind of turns around after he's done with all this, and he basically just like drops the mic. You know, he's like, that's what we need to do. That's it. Mm. And after a while, you know, he started explaining what he had done, why he did all of these different things. And I was amazed sitting there watching as these executives just like bought in to this redesigned process. If you've worked with large organizations at all, you'll know that like change management, like getting them to change their processes is extremely hard, right? Big companies like, I think this was maybe Nissan or something. Big companies like that, very set in their ways, take a very long time to change even a small bit of the process.
Sure.
And as a young consultant, I had already figured that out. So watching these people, you know, just immediately buy into what he was doing, I was like kind of blown away. You know, on the one hand, I was thinking to myself, wow, I don't care about any of this. Because to me, like saving a huge company thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, whatever it is not exciting. You know, it's not fun for me.
Because they're bound to have some inefficiencies that you could find. I mean, they're huge, slow, dumb old organizations a lot of times. And, you know, the people in those organizations aren't necessarily paid to find inefficiencies. They just kind of go in 9 to 5 and do their job and leave.
Absolutely. Like you hit the nail on the head. And that's why there are so many like boutique niche consulting companies like we were talking about before. It's just because if you can find a business process that you specialize in, that you know how to run really efficiently, you can create a consulting business around that business process. It's kind of fascinating. So I appreciated what William was doing, even if I didn't really care about the subject matter necessarily. But I tell this story because that's kind of what I tried to do with e-commerce, right? I mapped out, you can imagine me like mapping it all out on a whiteboard, and basically took a step back and said, okay, let's take this, strip this down to like its component parts. Let's map out all of the assumptions and let's redesign this process so that it actually makes coherent sense. Because this guru, this expert who I bought in, you know, he didn't do that. He made some money with Amazon and he said to himself, man, I could make a lot more money if I sell courses teaching people how to start a business with Amazon. So he did what he knows. You know, he started this sort of Amazon.
What I like about your story too, though, what I'm getting out of this is, hey, you tried this course. Things didn't work out. You were hemorrhaging money, like you said, trying to follow what this guy said, but you didn't give up there. It wasn't like you were like, hey, this didn't work out for me. I guess I'll move on to something else. You said, hold on a second. Let me go in and break down what this guy was telling us. And then see what worked and what didn't work, and where did I mess up? Like you kind of internalized the failure, and then you turned around and looked at what you learned. This is actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, thank you. But exactly, I hated the idea of just sort of being beaten by this. You know, like I knew there were so many people who were making a ton of money with e-commerce, with even this little guru's method. So I was thinking to myself, like, okay, why has this not worked for me? What am I doing wrong here? I kind of was determined to figure it out, at least figure out why it wasn't working. But at the end of the day, when I had done that, you know, I did the same thing, right, that William did. I took out big pieces that weren't needed. I reordered the steps. I added little bits and pieces in here and there. And when I was done, I sort of like distilled it down to this process that I created. I call it, it's like a framework. I call it the 5 fundamental question framework. And basically what I learned from creating this framework is that e-commerce is a repeatable process, right? If you can learn the best practices way to answer all 5 of these questions, it's like clockwork. You can make money selling a particular product online. Which I think is pretty cool. And it doesn't pigeonhole you into one e-commerce platform or fulfillment model or marketing technique, right? It's about having a firm understanding of all of the options out there and all of the best practices, so that for each individual situation, because every situation, every product is different, for each one, you know what the best way to move forward is.
I like this because the last person we just talked to that's heavy into FBA also reiterated the fact that this was about process. And then I brought up the fact that, you know, McDonald's, when you buy a franchise of McDonald's or a lot of other franchises, you're buying a process. You're not just buying the brand McDonald's, you're also buying the process that made McDonald's successful. And essentially what you've done is you've formulated a process that you can share with other people that help them, no matter whether they're selling on Amazon, whether they're selling any of these things. I'm guessing it helps them identify a product to sell based on its popularity and its competition. How do you use FBA? How do you, or whatever it is, but you've broken that down for people to try to make it simple.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, you're like finishing my sentences here, which I love. You get it. Like I told you, it's the five fundamental question framework, right? There's five questions you got to answer. The first one is, what product am I going to sell? Right. So that I think is maybe the number one thing holding a lot of people up, stopping them from starting an online business. They say to me, like, you know, when I talk to people about this in person, I'll say, oh, I've started a business. I sell stuff online. It's pretty cool. And I'm actually starting a consulting business to teach other people how to do it. And they say to me, the first thing they say almost every time, oh man, I don't have a product to sell. So thanks, but good luck. And I try to tell them, like, that's part of the process, right? Figuring out what product to sell is the first step that you should be going into. And there's two like sub tasks within deciding what product to sell. It's product ideation and market validation, right? So the first thing you do, you have to come up with a market or a niche that you understand very well. So I recommend that people start by just like looking at their life, right? Look at where you spend your time, what your hobbies are, what your interests are, and what your skills are, right? What are you good at? What do you like doing? And how do you spend your time? Ask yourself those questions and really dig deep. And what most people don't realize is those are all potential markets, right? Where you can launch a product into those markets. And because the core of any business is a product, and a good product, all it does is solves a problem, right? You guys know this.
So yeah.
If you start with a market that you understand really well, you're going to be really good at identifying the pain points and the problems within that market, because you understand it so well, because it's a part of your life. And once you've done that, you'll be able to quickly come up with like a short list of product ideas, right? Oh, wouldn't it be cool if this thing existed, which stopped this? You know, like I like to throw examples in there to help it make it real for people. Like I like to hike, right? You know, I always am getting blisters on my heel after mile 10 on the trail. Wouldn't it be cool if there was a hiking shoe that had like some thing on the heel of the shoe that prevented me from getting blisters? You know, that sort of simplistic, you know, example illustrates the point. You understand hiking because you like to hike a lot. You understand a problem because you experience that problem a lot. And so you can sort of like ideate, theorize products that would solve those problems, right? So that's the first step. You just come up with a sort of theoretical list. But then to your point, you can't stop there, right? You can't just sell a theory. Then you have to do market validation. You have to research using some awesome, amazing tools that are out there online, which if you've never seen them before, they'll get you excited, right? You can go find a tool like Helium 10 or Jungle Scout, for example. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with those, but you can actually look at the sales data for every product on Amazon. It's incredible. So you can search this database, and let's say you're interested in learning about the hiking shoe market. You type in hiking shoes, and it will tell you, okay, the top 20 sellers of hiking shoes on Amazon are on average doing $60,000 a month in sales. their reviews, their review rating is an average of 4.5 stars out of 5. You know, they push 1,000 units a month, whatever it is. Like, all of the data about all of those sellers is searchable and accessible through these online tools. And you can use them to sort of like size the market, gauge the competition, and really put hard data against your product ideas.
That's awesome. And you know what's funny? I mean, Amazon is such a good collector of data. I remember when they put that RFP out for HQ2, and all these cities submitted all this information about their cities. So Amazon collected all that information, and essentially now they're selling that information. This is what I heard. They're selling that information to other companies who they have a database that companies could go into if they're considering moving to another city or they're considering whatever. They can go in here and like search and filter and look at all this data that all these cities in the country submitted to Amazon about all these stats that they had. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, make no mistake about it. Amazon is a data company and a technology company masquerading as a retail company.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, big time, big time. I mean, they run commerce. I mean, they run e-commerce, and it'd be crazy for them not to collect data. I mean, if I was putting out a big RFP, I mean, would most people think, oh, hey, we're going to collect all the data from every city that sent us this information? No, but Amazon is a data first company. So when they put out that RFP, obviously they're going to save that data. And people were critical of them, but it's like, hey, this is smart. And actually, it's probably a good idea to have a database with all that information in it. And good for them for collecting that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Yeah, it's fascinating. And so really, these tools get you to the point where, you know, you have these ideas. You can actually search the other way too. You can say, okay, show me all of the markets that are doing $10,000 a month in sales or more. And it will just show you a list of products basically on the screen.
Wow.
You say, all right, well, I could sell that. That's pretty awesome. So you get to this point where you're like, wow, okay, I can see exactly what other people are selling right now. I can see exactly what my revenue potential is. I can say, okay, if I can capture even 2% of this market, you know, that's 50 grand a year in sales or something like that.
Wow. So you can start adding it up and saying, hey, is this worth my time? You know, and you could project the fact that, hey, it is selling. There's money out there. So if I've got some crap 9-to-5 job that's paying me no money every year and I'm stuck, I feel stuck in it, I could almost go into this, do some research, and have the confidence that I could at least replace that income.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely advocate for all of my consulting clients and subscribers to my brand, you know, do financial projections. Do as much of your business on paper as you can before you spend a dollar. There's no point in taking a big risk by spending your money before you've mapped it all out on paper.
Totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. So how do people get a hold of you? How do they get these to learn about this process that you've got? You know, what would you say is the next step? I'm listening to this podcast right now. I want to learn more. What do I do? Do I go to ecomboardroom.com and sign up there? Or is there another thing you would recommend? Is there a book out there or something?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few things. You know, if you're listening to this and you're interested in this sort of framework that I've been describing, right? This thing that I believe I've designed, which reliably allows me to launch successful e-commerce products sort of repeat in a repeatable way. I've got a few ways that you can get that information, and actually you can get that information 100% for free from me. I don't think that this type of thing should charge money for it. So I created a playbook is what I call it. It's just like this pretty short PDF guide that walks through all 5 of those questions and gets you in the frame of mind, right? It gives you the best practices way to answer all 5 questions. It points you to additional resources and really just like gets you off on the right foot. And I made a special page just for the podcast where you guys can get that.
Oh, nice.
So if you guys go to www.5qbook.com, that's the number 5, the letter Q, book.com/city for Side Hustle City. You'll find that download available for you guys for free. And I did write a book on this entire framework as well. It's called How to Start and Grow an E-commerce Business. It's definitely available on Amazon at the least. But start with the playbook, you know, grab the free download, check out the method, you know, if it resonates with you, then absolutely, you know, take a look at the book.
Well, and I've seen some stuff too, some free tools on the Ecom Boardroom, and Ecom is ECOMM boardroom.com. But I'm seeing some things on here too. You got e-commerce business launch checklist, the Amazon FBA Excel templates, supplier outreach template, e-commerce gold rush report, top three mistakes, digital marketing. And there's a bunch of stuff on here. It looks like you're just giving away.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my model. You know, we give away the information. I don't think that, you know, people have done it in the past. You know, they've started businesses where they like withhold the best information. And, you know, if you buy my $2,000 masterclass or whatever, then I'll give you the information. I'm not interested in that business model. I think that sharing the best practices, sharing the information upfront is the best way to like establish my expertise, right? So like check out all of my best ideas. They're available for free on my website. And if you like them, then we can talk about doing business together, right? So like we have services that we offer startups, you know, e-commerce startups. We, you know, we'll help you think through all five of these questions. We'll help you run your marketing engine. You know, we can help you with advertising and, you know, blogging for search engine optimization. You know, all of these different components that go into running the day-to-day, you know, we can help with that stuff. But in terms of the information that you need in order to start a business, no, it's all there for free available on the site.
And that's pretty smart, because you don't want every bum hitting you up. Like, you want them to be prepared when they call you. I don't just want people to be like, okay, now where do I start? Read the playbook first. Go download some stuff on my site. Understand what the hell we're talking about here. Do something, maybe get started, open up your store, figure out a product you want to sell, then call me and we'll help promote you.
Yeah, if you really want to do it, you'll do all this stuff. I'm not going to charge you for it, but I'm not wasting my time answering bullshit questions.
Yeah, you only got so much time during the day if you're going to help somebody. Like, it sounds like a one-on-one thing practically. But so
I like the fact you give us the free anyway, and then it's like the hard part's implementing everything.
Right. But you're making money regardless. I mean, you got your own stores going on and you're doing your own thing. So, I mean, it's like, hey, look, if you want to contact me, you know, and you want to do some business together, that's fine. But if you don't,
read this first.
Yeah.
Bring the properties and we'll talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's cool. That's pretty much it. That's my model. And I'm doing that for a number of reasons. But one of the biggest reasons is that I'm developing a software tool right now, which will be released in about 2 months, I think. I just had a meeting with my developer earlier today, and I'm excited about the progress, but we're about 2 months out, I think. So that's where I'm headed, is more in like the SaaS business model direction. So with that in mind, I'm a lot more interested in consulting small businesses who are interested in starting and growing, and providing this software tool that will help people kind of manage their business in the day-to-day on the back end.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you're legit. You've come from the business world. You come from consulting. It's not like you're not a trained consultant already. I mean, that was your job. So, I mean, to be able to put together a playbook from someone like you makes a whole lot of sense than someone who's just like, hey, I did Amazon for a bunch of years, and here's what I did. Like, I mean, it almost feels like this is a professionally put together piece. This is well thought through. There's process behind it. You know, you went to a great business school, obviously, and you've done it. So, I mean, I know I'm going to go on here and download it and check it out.
Yeah,
why not?
I've already sent it to my email.
Oh, there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, appreciate that, guys.
Yeah, this is great. Wow. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to leave with our guests? I mean, this sounds like this is their next step to getting going, but what else you got, Charlie? Is there anything you want to say? Any motivation you have for people? I mean, a lot of people sit on their hands and, you know, you got free information here that you can download and do something with, but obviously you're going to have those folks who are like, oh, I don't have time for it. Just like, I don't have 15 minutes to like stop into the gym and do a little weights. You know, I just don't have time for it. You know, same type of people.
If you don't have time to warm up, you don't have time to work out. That's Jim Wendler.
There you go.
That's it. No, yeah, that's it. I mean, just take action, people. You know, like, I think too many people are just consumers of content. Don't just stick to that in your daily life. You know, yes, consume content, but every time you consume content, try to take some action from it. You know, what's the next step? What's the action step? And I think, you know, check out the stuff that's on the site for free. Honestly, if you read it all and you say, this is garbage and you don't want to work with us, that's fine. But you might as well take a look at it. And you're going to see that we are very next step oriented. Everything that you download will say, okay, now I'm glad you read this, but here's what to do next. Here's that first step. So just do it. Take action, guys.
It's how you make money. Yeah. One foot in front of the other. Can't climb a mountain unless you go step by step, you know?
Amen.
All right.
All sorts of Confucius wisdom today.
Dude, I got memes all day on our Facebook page. You see them?
It's like parable after parable.
Hey, I take those things to heart.
I don't know if this is a side hustle show or a philosophy show.
It's a little bit of both. We're opening minds and opening
there's a gray area. Wallets. Yeah. Yeah. We do our thing. All right, Charlie. Well, good luck, man, with everything. And if, you know, you start up that wine brand with that last name of yours and maybe like a luxury clothing brand and, you know, a shoe brand, whatever. Like, you can do anything, man.
Yeah, I'll send you guys a bottle.
There you go. There you go. Awesome. Well, it's great to have you on the show, Charlie, and hopefully people take next steps, and I'll play around in here and see what I can come up with, too.
Appreciate it. Adam, Kyle, very nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on.
See ya. Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.